This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The forest is our heartbeat. The struggle to save indigenous land in Malaysia is the latest report into indigenous rights by Amnesty International. The paper's researcher, Rachel Chua Howard, joins me now, together with Dr. Colin Nicholas, who is the coordinator for the Centre for Orang Asli Concerns, to discuss if the battle to protect indigenous communities and their rights to their native land in New Malaysia is any different than before. Welcome, both of you. Thank you for joining us today. So, Rachel, maybe we can start with you. So this was, I know, a bit of a labor of love. You know, it took you a long time to get this paper done. Tell me a little bit about that. You know, how long did it take you? You know, all the research that went into it.
Sure. Well, the research for this report started in 2017 and went on into 2018. During this time, we interviewed over 80 Indigenous community members, village heads, local activists, members of civil society organizations, lawyers, academics, and journalists. So a very wide range of people across the country. Research took place in Peninsula Malaysia, but also in Sabah and Sarawak. So that's one reason for the length of time it took to pull this report together. We really wanted to get a comprehensive overview of Indigenous land and how it was being dealt with in the country, as well as the challenges that were faced, being faced by those defending Indigenous land. And that's one of the main topics that this report also looks into.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you had a big team with you, or it was...
It was a small team, actually, just a few researchers from Amnesty, and that's how we usually do our research. But we also draw on, you know, a lot of the past work that has been done on this issue, and there's been plenty of that, including by Dr. Colin as well. So that was a big help to us. We also met with representatives of the National Human Rights Commission, and that was also important in looking at their report that was done some years ago now.
Yes.
The National Inquiry on Indigenous Land Rights.
Mm-hmm. That was in 2013, if I'm...
That's right. And that is quite a comprehensive report in itself. So that already has many good recommendations that we also hope that the government will implement now that we have a new government in place.
Right. Okay. And yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later. But I mean, this paper, like you said, looks at the challenges faced by the indigenous communities here in Malaysia, and specifically related to land rights. So in your report, you write of a lack of recognition and implementation of indigenous people's rights to land in law, policy, and practice. Could you elaborate on that point for me?
Sure, yes. Well, the report documents the human rights violations faced by people defending Indigenous people's land. We found that across the country, community leaders defending Indigenous land and those that advocate alongside them have been arrested, harassed, intimidated, sometimes physically attacked, and in one case killed for their work trying to protect this land. And the failure of the government to protect these people, those defending the land, has also undermined their work and exposed them to greater danger. So, for example, in Sarawak, we spoke with Indigenous leaders and communities that told us they were regularly intimidated by people they described as gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
These were, when they filed police reports about these attacks or this harassment and intimidation, these reports were not taken seriously. So this climate of impunity where these police reports are not acted upon actually allowed for further attacks, and also allow for a situation which led to the killing of activist Bill Kayong, for example, in downtown Miri in 2016. So apart from, you know, the threat of physical attacks, we also found that the other challenges faced were investigation, arrest, also reprisals for village heads who were opposing development on land. They claimed as ancestral, or activists and lawyers who told us that they were labeled as instigators, for example, for supporting Indigenous peoples.
Okay, so it's not just the Indigenous communities, but also anyone who dared to speak up on their behalf. Okay, Colin, you're the coordinator for the Centre for Orang Asli Concerns, which is, I think, is going to celebrate its 30th anniversary soon?
Yeah, 29th
this year. I mean, this is nothing new, all the things that Rachel just mentioned just now?
Yeah, it's nothing new, but not only is it nothing new, but it's becoming more aggravated. It's a higher scale now, no?
Okay.
So We hope there will be changes, but it looks like there's not.
Okay. And when you say that it's aggravated, are you talking in terms of land rights? Are you talking about the abuses faced by
both.
The...
There are more encroachments to Orang Asal lands. Mm-hmm. There's more abuse because when there are more encroachments, you will want to have to use more avenues, more force to get those lands. See?
Okay.
And you're back to the old problem of who really wants, you know, to make most out of it.
I see. So again, the Orang Asli and, I mean, the natives of both Sabah and Sarawak, they're being taken for granted. Their rights are being abused. You know, you mentioned just now Bill Kayong's death, right? Was it like a game changer as well in terms of, you know, Orang Asli, I mean, the natives of Sabah and Sarawak speaking up, Orang Asli also fighting for their rights?
I think it depends how you look at it. I mean, you would think that... Bill Kayong's murder in downtown Miri would really have woken some people up to mm-hmm. the threats that are being faced by communities, especially in Sarawak, in terms of, you know, the threat of physical violence. But unfortunately, it does not seem like that much has changed, at least right. when we spoke to communities. I mean, it seemed we were told by Davi Kayong, Bill's brother, that Bill had filed numerous reports to police about the threats that he was facing ahead of his death. So it certainly seemed to us that could have been prevented by the state, and it wasn't. So that was quite alarming. And people that spoke to us, you know, last year, so 1 year on from his death, really told us that they were much more fearful of speaking out because of, you know, what happened to Bill. And that is also quite concerning. And that they hadn't really noticed a massive change in the attitude of the police and others.
Yes, that's very true. But if you look at it in a positive way, there's now greater awareness because of this incident, because of the publicity surrounding this incident, yeah. because of the arrest in Kelantan, the Tamiya arrest against the loggers, no?
Yes.
And because of that, there's greater awareness among the public and greater support among the public. The fact that people now can mention the word Bill Kayong, no?
Yes.
Means that
yes.
there has been this happening. Pernah leaders like Kelesau Naan was killed many years ago, no? Apparently by loggers also, but nobody knows about that. So the good thing about it is that the activists, the people have been able to use these incidents to create greater awareness and hopefully move for change.
Okay. And I mean, just something else that I wanted to touch on in the report, it implied that even the police authorities, you know, might have been privy to some of the harassment of the activists, for example. I think your interviewees described that gangsters had appeared, as you mentioned as well, in what happened to be police vehicles to confront. This is like when there were blockades set up. Is that something that you came to find in your research?
Yeah, we certainly heard a lot about people described as gangsters, especially in Sarawak, but also in Kelantan and other states. So I think what really needs to change in terms of that is that police need to take reports of these gangsters seriously. Authorities must initiate thorough and partial investigations into all attacks of threats and assaults. Where there's evidence of criminal responsibility, these people must be brought to account in fair trials. And the Sarawak government actually mentioned a couple of years ago now that gangsters were an issue when it came to land rights. And they actually said that they would revoke the licenses of companies that were found to be linked to gangsters. Now, mm-hmm. according to our research, we didn't find evidence of any of that actually happening. And okay. so the Sarawak government needs to make good on that promise. Otherwise, there's going to be a climate of impunity where these attacks on by gangsters on communities can be allowed to continue.
Okay, and I think another problem is that, you know, a lot of these incidents, you know, if the authorities don't act or if you try to take it to the courts, that is going to be a long, lengthy process. And of course, in that during that process, then the land that they were fighting for example, is cleared. You know, a lot can happen in that time and during these lengthy legal processes, right? Is that something that is accurate?
Yes, in the sense that as a last resort, many communities have gone to court.
Mm-hmm.
And to the credit of the Malaysian judiciary, they have been winning some of the major cases
sure.
and very good precedents. Unfortunately, in the last two years, no, at the highest level of the courts, no,
yeah.
They've been trying to reverse those precedents. Mm-hmm. And that's something which I think the Malaysian government or the courts don't understand, the word precedents.
Yeah.
Because every time there's a new case, instead of basing it on what has been decided upon, the orang asal are expected to go through all the whole process again, look for evidence and so on. No, so the odds are against them. And going to court is no security that you will win your case, especially in this climate today.
Like you said, it's just a long, lengthy process, and it's expensive as well, and it's a terrible situation. I'm speaking today to Rachel Chua Howard. She's Amnesty International's Malaysia researcher, and Dr. Colin Nicholas. He's the coordinator for the Centre for Orang Asli Concerns. And we're touching on Amnesty's latest research, which is titled "The Forest is Our Heartbeat: The Struggle to Save Indigenous Land in Malaysia." And we're discussing whether, you know, the rights of Orang Asli are being recognised better in this new Malaysia, or whether it's just the same as before. We'll continue that discussion after this quick break. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today are Rachel Chua Howard. She's Amnesty International's Malaysia researcher, and Dr. Colin Nicholas. He's the coordinator for the Centre for Orang Asli Concerns. And we're discussing, well, New Malaysia and whether our Indigenous communities are being better protected under them. And, you know, this all stems from Amnesty International's latest research paper called "The Forest is Our Heartbeat: The Struggle to Save Indigenous Land in Malaysia." So a lack of participation in decision making, I think that, you know, with regard to Indigenous land by Indigenous communities, that's also cited as a major problem in the report. Maybe you could elaborate on that for me, Rachel.
Sure, yes. I mean, all of the defenders and activists that Amnesty spoke to highlighted this lack of free prior informed consent for development projects that makes it difficult, if not impossible, for communities to defend land they lay claim to once development starts. And this lack of consultation has also contributed to the atmosphere of division and distrust between the government and Indigenous peoples, raising the threat of further, like, clashes and conflicts with the state and companies and communities. So this is a very important issue that needs to be addressed. This issue of consent, where communities often find out about development projects once a signboard goes up on land and are actually left out of this whole decision-making process about whether development happens on their land, because only maybe a few of the community's opinions are taken into account, if at all. And these people might already have their own interests in supporting development projects.
Okay, and I also read in the report that in Peninsular Malaysia, for example, village headmen are usually appointed by the government without consulting the community. Is that something that is is that also something that's accurate?
No, that's not quite correct. The village headmen are elected by the community and usually endorsed by the JAKUA, the Orang Asli Advancement Development.
Okay.
But the reality is that most village headmen today are aligned to the government, at least the previous government, because of various factors, not the least of which is their salary.
Right, which is they receive from the state.
Yeah.
I see. And so is that also a possible factor, a key factor in hampering, you know, the defence of these Indigenous lands?
It is. We have leaders who are against Orang Asli headmen, who are against the logging.
Right.
We also have Orang Asli headmen who are for the logging. Mm-hmm. So they cause a split in the community, you see?
Yes.
So that's what thing the authorities would love to see, you know, the breakup of the community.
The community itself, right? And then the developers, of course, will say, look, I've got the support of the village headmen, right? So, you know, what are these people fighting about in that sense?
But I think the main issue here, as Rachel pointed out, is that the government sees the headman as the representative for the community. Mm. And as long as he gives the permission or the okay, it is as if the whole community has given the consent.
Right.
That's the wrong approach of free, prior, informed consent.
Yeah, there's no due diligence and such conducted, right? Okay, so that's also, so that's another problem. You know, Rachel, what other information was uncovered during these interviews, or what was, you know, I guess what was to you most shocking from all of this? It's a lot of shocking things, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think that the similarity in the challenges that are faced by communities, in the sense that there's so little recognition of Indigenous land still, and that many communities are still having to resort to lengthy court processes if they're to ever have a chance of recognizing recognition of their land. I think that was the overwhelming finding, that to me, I think, you know, is at the crux of this whole issue. And although there were, you know, different challenges from state to state in some cases, I think that this broad problem of a lack of recognition of Indigenous community land and the communities themselves, them seemingly being invisible to the mm-hmm, government, mm-hmm. being invisible to the rest of society, feeling like they are being abandoned in some way, and their real determination to continue to fight for their land. That was a really positive thing that came out of this research, or resonated with me, that despite all the odds, the connection to the land that these communities feel is so strong that they'll continue to struggle for their land. Despite,
the harassment.
This harassment, the arrest, intimidation, etc.
Okay.
Recognition of land rights is a big issue. In fact, it's the greatest manifestation of the biggest problem the Orang Asal are facing. Mm-hmm. That is the non-recognition of themselves as the indigenous peoples of this land. Because we recognize the Malays as the indigenous peoples, the pre-Burmese and so on. And because of that recognition, the Malays get a lot of rights to their lands, Malay reservation lands, to quotas in government, quotas in economics and business, and education and so on, to support of the languages, to support of the cultures, to support of the religion, no?
Yes.
It is because the Indigenous peoples are not recognized as Indigenous peoples, the first peoples on this land, that we have all these problems, you know?
Yeah.
Education, health, you know, they're very far behind in all the various social economic indicators. And land is the biggest manifestation which the Orang Asal experience because of that major problem, non-recognition of them as Indigenous peoples.
You mentioned earlier, Jakua, the Department of Orang Asli Development. I mean, what role have they played in all of this, you know, in advancing that recognition that the Orang Asal and Orang Asli need?
In fact, at one time, they actually rejected the fact that they were Indigenous peoples, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when the UN DRIP was, the United Nations Declaration on Rights of Indigenous Peoples, was adopted at the UN by Malaysia, they said it was not for the Orang Asal, it was for the Malays.
Right.
Okay. And Jakua had for a tough time a problem recognizing Orang Asli as Indigenous peoples. They say they are Aborigines. What's the difference? I don't know. But there was a problem. So Jakua was just an agency of the government to promote government interests.
Right. And I mean, now with a new government in place, are you seeing any sort of reforms? Or I mean, I know you called for a special ministry with this new government, but for Orang Asli rights. But are you seeing any changes?
No, there is hope for the new Jakua, because now there's an Orang Asli who's heading the department.
Yep.
They are very new, young, fresh graduates who are, you know, very motivated to do something in Jakua, but the mindset needs to be changed, and that has to come from the top political leaders.
Okay.
So Jakua will just follow whatever you tell them.
But, you know, it was in their manifesto, Pakatan Harapan pledged, you know, to implement numerous human rights reforms, including, as you said, to recognize, uphold and protect the dignity and rights of the Indigenous peoples of Malaysia. But I don't know, do you think it's just too soon to say, perhaps?
I think it's a little too early to say. I mean, let's give some time for these changes to take place. However, you need to see some movement, you know, fast. This is an important issue. It's something that was, as you mentioned, promised and mentioned in the election manifesto of Pakatan Harapan in some detail.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are some things that could be taken up quite quickly, including bringing forward a debate on the recommendations of the Suhakam National Inquiry Report, for example, and starting to take some steps towards looking at this issue. I mean, the government has also promised previously to ratify human rights conventions, including the ICCPR, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. These all have provisions on the rights of Indigenous peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are also important steps that should be taken.
And, you know, how do you feel about the latest move to not implement ICERD, the Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination? Because that also, would affect Indigenous communities very greatly.
Yeah, that was a deeply disappointing turn of events, that ICERD and that treaty does not seem to be able to ratify it, at least for the moment. And I think that unfortunately, there was I don't think a very good understanding of that convention amongst, and there wasn't much education about what that convention actually means, because it's not meant to take away the rights of any group of people. Yeah. In fact, it's meant to ensure that everybody's equal, and also that everybody's rights are respected regardless of their race. So that was an unfortunate occurrence, and we're really hoping that at least some of the other conventions can be ratified by the government. I mean, the other thing to know is that this government was elected, you know, on the basis of its promises
in its manifesto. Yeah.
So if they promise to ratify treaties, then they need to make steps and move towards that.
Yeah. And Colin, how did you feel about that, you know, that move to not ratify ICED?
Of course, it's just a lack of political will. And it's all politics, you see.
Yeah.
And not just ICED. The Orang Asli promises under Pakatan, no? Mm-hmm. Harapan. You made it in the manifesto, okay? The Prime Minister met the Temiyas and made some promises.
Yes.
Just yesterday, he met another group of Orang Asli. And then you have a Institutional Reforms Committee that had a section on Orang Asli, and there were very clear recommendations what needed to be done. And now, because of the Cameron Highlands by-election, you say you want to have an Orang Asli conference.
Yes, I was just going to ask you about that.
Which was supposed to be on the 11th, now mm-hmm. postponed to the 18th, now postponed to after Chinese New Year.
Okay.
What are you having an Orang Asli conference? What you're saying is that you do not know what the Orang Asli want. You do not know what the government plans have been there for there. You don't know what you promised, and you want to start all over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now is the time for action, to put into action what you promised, what has been told to you, what has been reported to you, and deliver.
Because mm-hmm. you, as you mentioned, the struggle is escalating. You know, the violence against the Orang Asli is also escalating, and things are just not getting...
Not just by big corporations or companies and so on, but by individual illegal loggers, land grabbers, and all this. They're facing all these problems. The little Napoleons on the ground, no?
mm-hmm.
in the district office and so on.
Okay. I guess, Rachel, what are you hoping will come out from, you know, from this research paper? You know, how are you taking this forward?
Yeah, we have been trying to have some discussions with the government. Obviously, there's different things that we do with a report like this. One is to ensure that it's out there and that people have the opportunity to learn and about the struggle that communities are facing here in Malaysia, not just in this country, but also globally. That's our reports are always available on our website, and we have a global membership that we work with to highlight issues in different countries. So that's certainly one thing that we're working on right now. Also increasing the awareness with our local office of Malaysians about this issue. Really hoping that there is some movement on this soon. I mean, this is something, as Dr. Collins says, that over the years there have been many good recommendations that have already been made to government about what should be done. So
sure.
It's very clear what the steps are that need to be taken. It's really about political will and whether there's that drive to actually protect those that are defending the land and also recognize indigenous land rights in this country.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a recent dialogue, a professor himself, and acknowledged the fact that it's very difficult to solve all these issues, just like I said, because you have to contend, the politicians have to contend with the conservative Malay, you know,
mm-hmm.
and their needs, no? Because many of the land issues in particular affect Orang Asli, Malay perception.
Right.
And politicians are not willing to address
those.
Is this, yeah.
Because they're always, I mean, you know, we even had that huge rally against, you know, ICED and things like that, the threats of violence and all of that, so they're taking this into account. But again, it all boils down to political will, as both of you said. But are you seeing any positivity in all of this, you know?
No, it definitely is a lot of positivity because with now there's a lot of engagement, there's a lot of, you know, dialogues, there's a lot of, you know, interventions and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the time for that is over. Now is the time for action. Putting into force the various processes, you know, short-term, long-term, so that the rights can be realized.
Mm-hmm. And the communities themselves, I mean, are they are becoming more engaged as well? You know, their voices are being heard more. Are you seeing more and more of that at least happening?
I don't see a spike, no. Because just like yesterday, a group from Sungai Siput went to see the forest department, and the boss was not there. Went to see the Jakwa, we were told that you have no powers and no rights, the government has to say. So all these things are still happening, you know. So that's the problem also. All these changes which are happening in the new government is not being, communicated or, you know, brought down to the community level, partly because of language, you know, partly because of the news, that they think is still the same.
Right.
Still what's going on. Because in reality, what they face is the same thing.
Okay.
There's no fundamental change within fundamental change of government. In fact, one of the first things the Pakatan government did in Selangor was to close down something which was very good for Indigenous peoples in the last two terms, no? We had what we call the Badan Bertindak Tanah Orang Asli, the Orang Asli Land Task Force, consisting of Orang Asli people themselves, who basically engage with the communities and do community mapping, no? GIS surveying and so on. And then with that indicative map, they sit down with the district office and work out some kind of a common area by which the lands to be gazetted.
Okay.
So this was done in Selangor, the last two governments, under Elizabeth Wong. But when Pakatan Harapan came to power last year, they closed down that department, that body. So it gives a wrong signal. It gives a wrong signal to the Orang Asli that, yes, there's a change of government, but I think there's really no change it's what's going to happen to all the Orang Asli lands and Orang Asli issues and so on.
Okay, so was there any explanation given as to why that department was closed down?
Yeah, they said land titling, the surveying of Orang Asli lands is the job of Jakwa.
Okay.
Simply showing that they didn't understand the issue. The Orang Asli are mapping out their own lands to tell you this is where our lands. They are not surveyors. We're not asking them to mark it into the cadastral maps, no? But then you bring it to Jakwa or land office or whoever to negotiate and to what actually needs to be gazetted.
Sure.
Jakwa doesn't work with the community in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they said it's the job of Jakwa, and Jakwa has not been doing it since the BB2S has been disbanded.
Okay. And is there a constant battle between state governments and the federal, you know, in terms of especially land rights?
That's the excuse they always give, no?
Right.
That Jakwa is, no, or honestly, it's a federal matter.
Yeah.
And land is a state matter.
Yes.
Felda is a federal matter, and land is a state matter. But Felda was able to get huge, huge, huge areas for Felda settlers, no?
Mm-hmm.
Simply because the government directed the states to do so.
Yeah.
You are the same government. You're the same party, you know?
Yeah.
So whether you want to do it or not, it's all boils down to it.
Okay.
Look at the positive side as well. I mean, I think as we've discussed a little bit, there is much more awareness, I think, and concern amongst some Malaysians, at least, that a community like Guamusang was facing a lot of intimidation, pressure from companies. And I think that did spark, you know, a specific move to try and address that issue, at least show that the government is trying to look at this issue in some detail. So I think, you know, if something can be done on that community, for that community in particular, then I think that would send a sign and a signal that, at least that in a situation like that, there will be some kind of response from the government. But that needs to continue. And there are other communities that do not get the visibility like Guamusang does. And there are other communities facing exactly those same problems. So this would be a good first step, but it wouldn't be good enough, you know. But I do think that there's, especially with the conversations that are now going on more globally about climate change and environmental protection, I think we know that Indigenous peoples across the world play an important role in mitigating effects of climate change by advocating for the forest protection. So I think that this also should resonate with people more, that when we are becoming hopefully a little more environmentally savvy, we do recognize the importance of Indigenous
people. That's interesting, because talking about Kelantan, right, the blockades have massive impact in terms of public awareness and so on.
Yeah.
But, you know, we also went to court in Kelantan, two cases, post-Batim and post-Pala, no?
Yeah.
in 2011. You know, and while the blockade was going on, the case was going on, and we actually won. You know, the courts ruled that the Orang Asli had rights to the customary lands, you know, 9,300 acres in the case of Post Platim. And on appeal, the state government negotiated with the Orang Asli to the extent that, yes, those areas which you settle, occupy and, you know, clear and cultivate, those will be given to you under the National Land Code. That means alienation, no? But those areas which are foraging areas will be still forest reserves, and the other areas will be catchment areas.
Mm-hmm.
So the state government promised not to lock the forested areas, the catchment areas, no? And Orang Asli will have access.
Sure.
So we have a very good example here of Kelantan, the same government that's harassing and giving so much hell to the Temiyans of setting up the blockades, no? So it's very, very confusing situation there. Here we have the Kelantan government in two cases, the Post-Bana and Post-Blatim case, where they have agreed to recognise the Orang Asli land and title it, and the forest reserve, it's all clearly marked out and numbered, will not be locked and be left as a catchment area and the forest reserve with Orang Asli having rights to their traditional use. At the same time, we have the Kelantan government encouraging the forest department to tear down the blockades and so on. So it's a method, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Blockades seemingly get no result. The court cases seemingly got some result in Kelantan, specifically, you know. So it's not a one case fits all situation. That's the problem, and we don't have to go through all that. Like I said, the top guy just has to say, Orang Asal have rights to their customary lands, and we are going to do all that we can, and if necessary, change the law so that those rights will be recognized. That's all he has to say.
Mm-hmm. But that's not happening.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess, I mean, we're running out of time, but, you know, if you could, what would your final advice be for the key officials on, you know, matters like this, especially pertaining to land rights for Orang Asli and Indigenous communities? Maybe, Rachel, we can start with you.
Sure. Well, I think there is a tremendous opportunity that we have now with a new government, as we've noted, to take some action on this. There also should be a move to recognize and protect those that are speaking out on behalf of their communities and realize that these people are actually brave people who are standing up to also help protect forests of Malaysia. So I think that really is our call, that these people are protected when they speak out, and also that Indigenous rights are more fully recognized in this country. And that would be our main message, I think, with this report.
Okay, all right. And what about you, Colin?
Well, the government has recognized that land rights is an issue. So until they solve that problem, they should have a moratorium on all land dealings in Orang Asal areas until they can come to some kind of a reasonable or acceptable resolution to the conflict, no? And have a timeline, short-term, long-term, as to how you can address all these issues. Not just say and have another conference, no?
A lot of talk and no action, essentially. All right, thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Rachel Chua Howard. She's Amnesty International's Malaysia researcher, and Dr. Colin Nicholas. He's the coordinator for the Centre for Orang Asli Concerns. And we were discussing the protection of Indigenous land under this new Malaysia, also touching on the report by Amnesty International, The Forest is Our Heartbeat, the struggle to save Indigenous land in Malaysia. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.